The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
Taken away by the Redskins, Trent Murphy. How about Murphy in this last series? The game is over, and the Redskins have won it.
That's right. The Redskins have won it 23-20, a victory at home over the Philadelphia Eagles. And look, after going up early in the game, 13-0 at halftime, tried the best to give it away, but the team came together. Last drive, Kirk Cousins. I don't know whether you want to call it fourth quarter heroics or not, but Pierre Garçon came up big, and the Redskins improved to 2-2 on the season with a 23-20 victory over the Philadelphia Eagles. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM. Also, federalnewsradio.com is the website. I'm Claude Jennings, as always. Kevin Stanfield in studio with us. Kevin, a win.
You might have to talk a little longer. I was holding my breath for the last 2 minutes, man. You know, I'm winded, man. I'm winded.
And funny, because this is actually one of the occasions where we recorded this show, right after the game. So emotions are fresh.
Yeah, everything you're
getting right now on the radio. We don't have the 24-hour window to kind of process and think things through. So you're going to hear some things you may have not heard the last season, or even the first three weeks of this season. We're fresh, raw emotion. Redskin win 23-20. I still got Popeye's chicken laying around here in the studio.
Hey, look, but rest assured, I'm still going to blast them now, because this game was in the bag, man. They should have been up like 24-0 at the half.
Well, let's talk about that, because, okay, so the Skins are up 13-0 at the half. Let's talk about the offense and the job that the offense had done. And it seemed like in the first half there was that commitment to the run. And we've been seeing an improved offensive line since week one. I mean, and again, that was one of the big questions coming into the season. And throughout the first four games, at least so far, the offensive line has been playing good and the running game has been good.
Yeah, but there's still, I mean, the commitment to the run is one thing. I mean, if you're totally committed to the run, you got to let the players know that you're committed to it too. We ran to another situation where they had a third and one. They gave it to the fullback. The fullback, for timing reasons, whatever, Darryl Young ran into the back of Trent Williams and they didn't get the first down.
Right.
Again, I repeat this, you know, I'll say it until they realize it. If your guy can't give me 1 yard, if you've got a multi-million-dollar player who can't give me 1 yard on the offensive line, why is he there?
You guys just thought that Kevin expected perfection when you lose.
He wants it in a win. That's right. And you got to dominate. It's all about domination. And the offensive line dominated in the first half, but they had to settle for field goals. They had to settle for two field goals, and that's why they were in the predicament that they were in at the end of the game.
Right. No. You've got a great point there. And then when you fast forward to the second half, just couldn't really generate anything offensively until that last drive. And, you know, we talked about this before, and it goes both ways, offense and defense. It seems like the Redskins coaching staff has an issue adjusting the game plan as the game goes on. They'll start out, and we saw this against the Giants, that the earlier things go bad, the worse, because it's like they just won't adjust anything. So the Giants jumped out to a quick lead. But then in this game, they took the lead into halftime. Then the Eagles come back, and they just could not seem to adjust at all to what the Eagles did in the second half.
Right, and to show you how objective we are, we're still going to blast them, even though they did win. The problem to me is when you're establishing an identity, you got to know who your horses are. Who are your studs?
That's
who are
point.
The stars on this team?
Right.
What's the pecking order here? Who are the guys that the younger, inexperienced players look up to? Mm-hmm. Every series you look out on this field, you're having a different 11 out there.
Right.
And maybe this will take time. Maybe it'll take
time.
And
that's
time.
Easier to do if you know who your guys are. But when you're just now trying to figure out who your quarterback is, because you made a switch in the beginning of the season, and then you have a guy in Alfred Morris who have proved beneficial in years past, but now you bring in this rookie who's been running fine, but it's like, okay, now who's our running back going to be? Or is it going to be running back by committee? You know, who knows? And then DeSean Jackson's out, but you've got Pierre Garçon. I'm just trying to figure out, why is anybody getting the ball to Pierre? And I think you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, well, let's go over the offense first. Let's take it. We start with the offensive line, like you said. They've been playing a lot better than you thought they would because you have all the same guys except
a sheriff.
Yeah, sheriff. Mm-hmm. Except for sheriff, you got a bunch of new guys there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have a bunch of new guys there, but they seem to be playing with more unity. And I guess that's what Callahan is bringing from Dallas is sending a lot more unity. They're all playing with the same purpose, if not with the same ambition. I still I'm hung up on that. You need give me a yard, yeah. And I think we're doing a lot better. Tight ends, Jordan Reed came up hobbled at the end of the game, but he was there for 95% of the game.
Right, and
we really needed him.
We're happy about that. Yeah, 95%, we'll take it.
That's a weird for us.
Yeah, when we heard the announcer say Reed's down, we were like,
another thing we were talking about, who are your studs? You look at the production of the rookie wide receivers. I'm very impressed with that.
Yeah, and they got a lot of run this game too. Look, Jameson Crowder. I mean, I think he's going to be a pretty good asset to this offense. And, again, a lot depends on what happens when Deshaun gets back. But as of right now, you've got to be happy with Crowder. You've got to be happy with Ross. And, again, I feel like Pierre's just out there like, hey, I'm still a pretty good option.
Yeah,
you could try working the ball to me and things will be okay. And we saw it on that last drive.
Yeah, I see a lot of Gary Clark and Jameson Crowder because he goes over the middle. You see guys who are like 6'9" who don't want to go across the middle like that. And there was a couple of catches he made in heavy traffic, and he went up there and got him. So, again, if these are your best players, though, they need to be on the field more.
Right.
Don't go through the circumstance, the ceremony of starting another guy.
Right.
Then putting him in later as an option, right? If he's your best player, put him out there from the beginning, right?
Right. No, that's a good point. So let's jump to the quarterback position since we're talking about the offense. And, when we're watching the game, look, I understand and we're not trying to talk quarterback controversy or anything like that, but I understand that when the coaches are evaluating the position and maybe even some folks on the team, they think that Kirk Cousins gives them the best opportunity to win now. Like, that's the guy that they want quarterbacking for the Washington Redskins, and I get that. But I'm watching, and I think it's clear that RG3 has more raw talent than Kirk Cousins, and he has the ability for more exciting plays, I think, than Kirk Cousins. And I'm watching Kirk. Now, I understand the coaches feel like he gives them the best opportunity to win, but I don't see him winning games that it's clear RG3 couldn't win. Am I going crazy? I don't see this Eagles game as a game that RG3 would not have been able to win. Now, I understand that there are plays where he's holding the ball too long and reads that he's not making it, all those kind of things that go into it. But I'm just not seeing this guy as a clear-cut, better option than RG3. Not that he's any worse, but I just don't see that he's head and shoulders above, Robert.
Well, at the 3-minute mark in this game, Jay Gruden was looking on StubHub for some low-priced airfare because toward the end of the season, I think he was looking to pack up and move on. But yeah, that decision to not play Robert and not just demote Robert, to deactivate Robert, that's strictly political. It has nothing to do with football, so you can't look at it as like there was an open competition and the best guy won. That was that didn't happen because poor Colt McCoy just standing there saying, hey, I'm a pro too.
Correct.
So that whole thing, that's not, it does fall along the lines of this mystery of who's the starter, who's your best player, why are these guys playing? But the quarterback position in the first half, I don't have the stats right in front of me, Captain Kirk was something like 18 for 22 for 150 yards, right? He didn't throw any interceptions, but didn't throw the ball downfield either, right? He was playing not to lose the game, and it was working to the point of them having a 13-0 lead at the half. But when the Eagles started challenging them, that same type of offensive philosophy was
left
not going to work.
Stagnant and not able to
exactly
score.
Exactly right.
So Kirk Cousins for the entire game, 31 of 46. He threw the ball 46 times, 289 yards in one touchdown. And the big stat, which is the big question about him, zero interceptions in this game. He did not turn the ball over, which is big for Kirk. But again, like you said, I mean, look, if you're going to throw the ball 46 times, you might as well, completing 31 passes and just 280 yards. That's a lot of short dinks and dunks and outs and short yardage passes.
Yeah, I did tweet at one time during the game that they consistently on 3rd and 10 ran 8-yard patterns. I don't know how that is in their game plan, right? But you got to get the first down no matter what. Why have a route in the play that does not get you the first down, right? It might look good as a stat route.
Right,
oh, I didn't throw an incompletion. You know what? You know, you got to change that.
No,
you
got to
change. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. And again, we're complaining an awful lot for a team that just won
for
the game.
A win. But see, that's good, though, because you know we could have started the show talking about we're going to the Super Bowl, we're going to win the East, and there's not a team in the NFC that can stop the Skins. And so it's balance. You know what I mean? We don't want to be those guys that are going to jump on and start the bandwagon up like the Skins are going to win, you know, go to the Super Bowl. You know,
the offensive coordinator of this team is like 26 years old, man. A couple of years ago, he was worried about who he was going to take to the prom, man. You know, so, you know, it's the basics. You know, once we get the basics straight, it's like Vince Lombardi said back in the ancient days, it's blocking and tackling and running. That's all it is. It's really simple. All right. Mm-hmm. No matter what brilliant offensive philosophy you think you have,
you got to block somebody, you got to be able to run the ball. You got to make a tackle.
Hey, look, since we're talking about the offense, let's talk about the running backs for a minute,
which is kind of interesting.
Because the biggest run of the first half was Chris Thompson on a give-up play. Mm-hmm. Because after a penalty, it was like 3rd and 15 deep in their own territory. And it was funny because I was on the way here and I was listening to the radio broadcast. Sonny Jurgensen said, if I were them, I'd just run a draw play and go to the sideline. And that's exactly what they called. They called a draw play, but Chris Thompson busted it for like 25 yards or so. Interestingly enough, he started the second half. Now, mm-hmm. you got Morris, right? You got Jones. You got the power running backs. Mm-hmm. But you put Chris Thompson in as your running back. And he's not between the tackles type of guy,
right?
He's a good change of pace on third down. So that's, again, goes back to my question. Who are your horses on this team? You got to stick with these guys. You got to be able to know that if I play well, I got a job. And somebody's going to have to outplay me to get my job, right? And that's not happening yet.
And that's a good point. Because even when you look at a smaller scale, last week, how many carries that Matt Jones had as opposed to Alfred Morris, this week it's almost the exact opposite, where Alfred Morris had 17 carries and Matt Jones had 6. And Chris Thompson had 6 carries. I'm sorry, Matt Jones had 7. Chris Thompson had 6. And so you're seeing this, you know, flop back and forth between Alfred and Matt Jones. And like you said, you're trying to figure out, okay, now who are the horses on this team? Even when you see other teams with dual back threats, usually there's one guy who everyone pretty much knows this is the main guy.
Right. Now, Captain Kirk's going to get a lot of glory for this last drive, but if you go back and look at it, it was Alfred Morris who carried them downfield. Kirk was serviceable on third down, but Alfred Morris was the one who really...
And that's kind of the problem with that split back thing. You talk about Alfred Morris. Guys like Alfred Morris, Matt Jones, they'll tell you they're not even really comfortable till they get about 10 carries, you know, 10, 12 carries.
Right.
They've got to get into a rhythm.
Right.
And so if you get Matt Jones just 7 carries, he's not going to get into that rhythm. Alfred Morris, I still say, no matter which one of these guys are going to be the main guy, Matt Jones, Alfred Morris, they have to have more than 17 carries. They've got to touch the ball 22 times.
Yeah, absolutely. At least. Absolutely. And then, you know, if they don't, somebody's got to go. I mean, there's not enough room because you're hurting your special teams by keeping 2 starting running backs. It could be trade bait. There's plenty of teams out here who would love to have a Matt Jones or an Alfred Morris.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I give it to him, like he said. That's a pro ball player right there, because he could have pouted that he wasn't getting the carries
just
that he did, you know, in his rookie year last year. But he was just ready. When they gave him the ball, he was ready and he produced.
Yep.
So you got to be proud of a guy like that.
That's right. That's right. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and federalnewsradio.com. You may not feel like it listening to the show, but the Redskins did win 23-20 over the Philadelphia Eagles to go to 2-2. The Giants are now 2-2. The Eagles fall to 1-3. And later on in the show, we're going to talk about the Eagles. I mean, you've got Chip Kelly, this genius, this guy who's got all these schemes and he's taking what he did in Oregon and in college. He's bringing it to the pros. They go 10-6, 10-6. And this year he gets rid of everybody and brings in some new people. DeMarco Murray, Matthews. He's got Sam Bradford. They're supposed to just take the NFC by storm and they can't seem to get out of their own way. And so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Redskins defense. But before we take that break, Kevin, let's talk about the special teams. I mean, that was a big concern coming into this game because we saw how Darren Sproles torched the Jets last week, and we're like, you know, special teams hasn't been, I don't know if anyone's been watching the last couple of years, but it hasn't been a strong point for the Washington football team. But they held their own today, except there was that one time in the third, I believe, where the Eagles were able to get some pretty good field position, but they didn't give up that huge big play.
Well, yeah, there was that one second quarter, that one punt return by Sproles that Tress Way actually made a brilliant play, because what he did, he didn't tackle Sproles, but he threw his body body into the blocker.
Right.
Which enabled another guy to get the Sproles, right? Which was, I mean, you got to give it up, right? You know, you got to do that, right? You got to, you know, sacrifice yourself. You punted. You gave it that punt. I kicked your coverage. So they didn't give up. I said, oh, no. But I know from now on, don't you kick this.
Right, yeah.
Better not kick. I will personally come down there and take a job if you kick to that guy again. No, the move, apparently, the reason that they got rid of Kai Forbath, they said that he wasn't kicking the ball out of the end zone. I don't really remember that happening or being a problem, but this guy, the new kicker, is so new, I don't even know his name, right? But he's kicking consistently into the end zone on kickoffs, which is kind of... You can't say consistently because they don't score enough to kick off.
We're not sure, but usually, yeah.
But they didn't. You know, it was a combination of them trying and it's just an early game lack of skill on the Eagles. They just were not there early in the game.
We're going to talk about the Eagles not being there early in the game a little later on. So before we close this segment, let's just talk about that last drive on offense. I mean, look, I think when you're in that situation, and most competitors live for that. You know what I mean? They live for the situation where, you know, we're down 4 points, a field goal's not going to get it. I'm the quarterback. I need to get us in the end zone. And it's one of those situations that could ultimately, define or set momentum going into the next game and the next week. And you want to try to build that momentum and build that confidence. And after last week's loss to the Giants, I think that Kirk needed this as a confidence builder. I think it would have crushed him had there been an interception or a fumble or a couple of sacks that lost the game. I think this drive here, I'm not saying it's going to make him into Joe Montana, and I'm not even saying that it's going to make him, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFC, but I think it will at least at minimum give him enough confidence for next week, and that's fine, and that's good. You know what I mean? To give him that confidence and to give the team that confidence. Like, the game was on the line, 4 points down, under 2 minutes, needed a touchdown, and this guy gave it to us.
I'm not quite ready to say Kirk won this game. Like I said, they gave them a healthy dose of Alfred Morris, and Alfred Morris was running strong. He was protecting the football.
But he doesn't have to win the game. You know what I mean? Don't lose it.
That's true. But a couple of those passes Kirk threw on that drive, the guys were covered, and you wonder, how did they catch that? Now, Kirk mentioned last week that he has to let the ball go. He said, you got to throw that pass, and the guys can make a good, you know, a good play on it if they want to. And we came to the conclusion that Kirk doesn't care about the completing the pass. He just wants to make sure that he throws it, right? Uh-huh. And you got to throw it. Given that, you got to throw it. But the Eagles were playing in similar circumstances as the Burgundy and Gold. We're playing with second string defensive backs, and a lot of injuries along the course of the game. They were calling some very, very strange, touchy penalties.
Yeah, a little petty.
Yeah, a little petty penalties, but you got to give it to Kirk. They won. You know, the legend of Captain Kirk.
That's,
you know,
it.
Does it start here, or does he live to create his own legend, right?
Right.
But pretty soon, well, we'll see, because in the coming weeks, he's going to meet up against Tom Brady. He's going to meet up against Drew Brees and Cam Newton and whoever's playing quarterback at Dallas at the time, right?
So whether it's Brandon Wheaton or Matt Castle.
Yeah, we'll see. We got to give it to Kirk this time. He did not lose this one.
That's right. A 23-20 victory at FedEx Field. The Washington Redskins over the Philadelphia Eagles to improve the 2-2. Coming back on the Federal Football Report, we're going to talk about the Redskins defense, who played a really good game. We'll also take a look at some of these penalties, and we'll also look around the NFC East as well. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.
Just a half a minute remaining. Looking that way, the pass, it's caught, touchdown to Garcon. They will reveal this as they do all scoring plays. Was Pierre Garcon in? Great pass and pretty good defense by the Eagles as well, David.
That time they brought the blitz. Kirk Cousins knew he had to get rid of that one quickly. And who does he go to? Pierre Garcon, who has had a phenomenal drive on this series.
So Kirk Cousins throwing 45 passes today, completing 30.
And as Kevin likes to say, ladies and gentlemen, thus the legend of Captain Kirk begins. That's the fourth quarter touchdown to send the Redskins up 23-20. And then the Eagles just kind of did some goofy stuff on the kickoff where Darren Sproles kind of wanted to return it, but they were telling him not to. They argued for a few seconds, and then they – you know, did that stupid little pitch stuff all the time. Yeah. So anyway, the Redskins win 23-20 over the Philadelphia Eagles to improve the 2-2. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. Hey, he's Kevin Stanfield.
Before we get to the defense,
you've got something.
I was very upset with Captain Kirk early because I made a couple of key acquisitions on my fantasy team this week. One was Pierre Garçon, which
came up big,
and the other one was Matt Jones. Now they were on the goal line. Uh-huh. Now it was like second and one or third and goal or something like that on the goal line. And I saw the play development. They're going to give the ball. They had Darryl Young leading Matt Jones into the hole on the left side, right?
How are you thinking fantasy points?
I'm thinking fantasy. Kirk bobbles the snap, allegedly. He bobbles the snap. The ball hits the ground. Kirk picks it up and dives over the left guard.
That's it.
Kirk scores the touchdown.
Forget the fact that the Redskins just scored the touchdown.
Robbing me of serious fantasy points. Now, I just play for the fun of it. I just play for the fun, but, you know, it's still serious fun, right? So thereby, inflating the legend of Captain Kirk, right? You know, he was responsible for the two touchdowns today. So, the legend lives.
Right. So, look, before we even get to the defense, though, let's talk about that last kind of ridiculous series. Now, I'll be honest with you, with 20-some-odd seconds left and the kickoff and Darren Sproles back there, I would almost say, why not take it out? I didn't understand why they did not return that.
Well, there had to be a decision that they made from the very, very beginning. They had to
say. Did anybody tell Darren that? Because he seemed like he was ready to go. He was upset.
He wasted like 5 seconds before he downed the ball.
Just
the clock stopped running when he touched the ball. Yeah. He would say, go, go, go. But see, if he wanted to run, he should just run the ball out. Which, against this team's special team, you like that attitude in the guy. You got to think, I'm going to the house every time I touch the ball. With this guy, he has a chance of doing it.
This is what I didn't understand. It's like, what is Philadelphia doing? Like, why wouldn't you return it with Darren Sproles?
But I guess they had decided on the sideline, whoever their special teams coach is, we're going to run this offense. I mean, they had a great deal of success in this offense. I think these were some of the longest passes Sam Bradford has thrown in his career. I mean, anytime you get Riley Cooper, who I might add, it was another one of my brilliant pickups this week on my fantasy team.
You did pretty good.
Right. Because I analyzed the defense. I know there was injuries in the secondary, but let's go over the whole defense. We'll start with the defensive line, who in the first half looked like a bunch of all pros. Every time Sam Bradford looked up,
he on his back. Somebody's
one of these
in
guys
his face.
On his back. I mean,
six total sacks, by the way, for this game.
Six sacks.
Chris Baker with two. Trent Murphy with two. Ryan Kerrigan, who last week we were wondering where in the world is Ryan Kerrigan. He had a sack today, and Preston Smith with a sack.
Well, Ryan Kerrigan suffered a hip injury early in the early in the second half. His mobility was limited, and you saw that because Bradford escaped him for one of those touchdown passes. He had him dead to rights. Ryan Kerrigan had him dead to rights, but Bradford sidestepped him and threw deep and hit, I believe it was Miles Austin, ex-Cowboy, for the touchdown. Mm-hmm. And so at least they said his name. I mean, because the first couple of games, he was missing in action. Trent Murphy, they said his name a couple, he had the big interception on the trick play at the end of the game. Yeah. But in the first half, the guys were world beaters. Although I am a little bit concerned because I don't hear Terrence Knighton's name. I don't hear enough pot roast happening during the course of the game.
Right.
For that to be my nose tackle, my disruptor.
And one of the biggest signings on defense.
He's the anchor in the 3-4 defense. Your nose tackle is the man.
Right.
At
least freeing up some space for the linebackers to do some things, but I'm not really seeing that either.
Well, it might be that defensive philosophy because even back in the days of Albert Haynesworth. Now, we'll talk about this. I was on Haynesworth's side during this whole thing because he signed a free agent as a 3-4 and they tried to change to the 4-3. Their philosophy on the defense for that 3-4 was your nose tackle, all he did was occupy space.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
mm-hmm.
else was built around him. He would either shoot to the right or shoot to the left and take up, occupy a center and a guard, either left or right. This might be the same philosophy here. Maybe it's not Knighton's job to make the play. Maybe it's his job to just to be a placemat.
Right, yeah, maybe.
plays
with
older.
Stat line with just one tackle through the whole game, it seems like he was just taking up space.
Now, Chris Baker got the start today over Stephen Paille, and I don't know if that was a performance thing or injury thing. You can't tell with this team.
Right.
Is it, you know, starting doesn't really mean anything.
Right.
You can start and not get back to the game again for the fourth
and
quarter.
And that's what happens a lot of times with some of these new defenses where they're doing so many heavy rotations that it doesn't really matter who plays the first play or second play because they're rotating guys in and out to try to keep fresh legs. Let's talk a little bit about the secondary. Look, I mean, we know that the Eagles were supposed to have this high-powered, high-scoring offense. And so, you know, I think I ranked the defense doing a pretty good job today, at least in the first half. And they got there when we needed some stops in the second half, they were able to get them. But I'm not sure whether it's great defense on the side of the Redskins or if it's just more of the same confusion with the Eagles on offense because they hadn't played well all season long up to this point. And today was more the typical Eagles that we saw the first three games of the season.
It's kind of interesting the schemes that they're putting these guys in, and it seems to me like a lack of communication within the team itself between those 26 coaches because there were times like Deshaun Golston was playing so close to the line, maybe they were afraid of the running game, but they left Chris Culliver on an island a couple of times, who was hurt this week, right? Some of the knee injury, right? But because of the lack of depth on this team right now, the lack of bodies, he had to start. And Bradford victimized him. I mean, when Riley Cooper beats you deep for 62 yards, come on.
Right.
You know, it must have been a mix-up right there.
Man, even coverage
right,
or something.
Even
communication.
A one-legged Chris Culliver stay with Riley Cooper, right? You know, so I'm giving them, I mean, although Bradford torched them, I'm going to give them a B because they just didn't have they couldn't have been expected to play any better than they did. And it wasn't just like the chaos of last year, you know. It was like guys just not knowing where they were supposed to be last year or coverages that just didn't make any sense last year.
And I was going to say, I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, you're seeing defense that's able to get some pressure on the quarterback that's not really giving up a whole lot in the rushing game. I mean, here's the Eagles team that, again, supposed to have three great rushers in DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles, and all day, you know, they only totaled 18 carries for 83 yards, just 83 yards rushing. And again, the Eagles have struggled moving the ball all season long, but then it's not like they come to Washington and get it right. You know what I mean? So I think the fact that they still struggled with that is testament to the defense playing well. Because, again, you know, if you're a struggling team, sometimes there are teams you mark on your calendar like, hey, we want to get it right this week because we play them.
Yeah.
And the Skins used to be that, but that's not what it is anymore. Mm-hmm. At least for this week for the Eagles, that's not what it
was.
Well,
for the first half it wasn't. But I saw in the second half, you saw Sam Bradford on the sideline laughing and smiling. You haven't seen that in a while. Yeah, but you know, but again, like I say, he victimized a weakened secondary, right? So, a couple of things that bother me though: the two personal foul calls on Deshaun Golston.
Let's jump to the penalties because this was eerily just a lot of penalties in this game. It's funny because we were talking about it earlier that I think this is a record for penalties thus far, not for the Redskins but league wide, right?
In the first three games. They've set a record in the first three games for penalties. The record was set in 2005. Mm-hmm. So to this point, at the beginning of this week's action, there have been 730 accepted penalties.
Mm-hmm.
The record was set back in 2005 with 716.
Wow.
That's accepted penalties, right?
Not the ones that are declined.
Right, or offsetting penalties.
Right.
And that seems to me to be, that's not just coincidence. That has to be something that the officials have gotten together and said, we're going to call this thing tight. I don't know if they've been directed to do that by their union, if they've been directed to do that by the league, but it's really starting to disturb me, right? Because it's breaking up the flow of the game. The games are taking a lot longer, and guys aren't sure of what to do, right? They're not playing with the confidence because am I going to get flagged for this? Am I not going to get flagged for this? What I think will happen in a case like this, guys are just going to go ahead and commit the infraction, and they'll say, well, they're going to flag me anyway, so I'll just keep doing it. I'll get away with it eventually.
Right.
But I think the league's going to have to take a look at that, long, hard look at it. You can't tell them to look the other way, but there's got to be some type of minimum guidelines. You have to, you know, we know a personal foul is a personal foul.
Correct.
But if a guy, like...
And some of this stuff, I mean, one of the bigger ones that I have an issue with are these... hitting a defenseless receiver. There are cases where the guy, the ball is clearly out of the out of reach. The guy's kind of stretched out. He's not going to catch it, and someone just like lays him out from behind. But then there's some where, you know, he may be defenseless, especially this game. There were a couple like that, but the guy just kind of runs into him a little bit, and they call that, you know, a personal foul. And so that's some of the ones that I have issues with. The ones that aren't so... I guess black and white, you know what I mean? That are kind of hard to call. And so, but again, it's at a point where it's like, look, the game is football, you know what I mean?
Right.
And there's going to be contact. There's going to be big contact, you know? And I'm thinking about guys like back in the day, like Ronnie Lott, who used to live off of knocking guys out, you know? That's the way it was right. played. And not saying it's the smartest thing, always the wisest, but I think there's a better way to legislate it where you don't take football out of football. It's still what it is, but you... make a safer game.
Yeah, but they should call more of those against the Eagles, because we don't want Robinson or Golston, those guys back there to lay off. We don't want dirty ball players. We don't want to go back to the days of Mark Carrier, headhunters, and spears like that.
Right,
but you know, just give them an opportunity to play the game. Give them, it's a man's game. It's a big boy game, right? We're not saying play dirty. Mm-hmm. We're saying that they just got to take a closer look. And I'm sure, I think when you have a personal foul, that the league has to review it. And he had two. So I'm pretty sure the league's going to have to review it. And then, you know, but if they review it and say, okay, well, you know, just let's, you know, you know, it was just a penalty, right? Just let it go.
Right.
But, you know, he faces possible fines and suspensions
because of this, right? Yeah,
you know?
No.
So I think that the penalties overall, they're going to have to take a look at the number of flags that are being thrown. I mean, they can't just, like, put a quota on it and all. But, you know, for whatever reason, they're a lot higher than they've been in the past 10 years.
Sure.
And they're going to have to take a reason to
In this game, there were 18 total penalties, which ended up costing both teams about 181 yards. The Eagles, 8 penalties for 72 yards. The Redskins, 10 penalties. Penalties for 109 yards. Here's just some other stats, man, that I thought were pretty amazing for the Redskins. Now, again, a lot of this is first half stuff, but 25 first downs for the Redskins as opposed to 14 for the Eagles. The Skins had the 79 total plays. Philadelphia only 52. Now, remember, Chip Kelly's got this fast-paced offense where he wants to get about 80-some-odd plays off every game. Only 52 today, and his totals have been down all season long. The Redskins, more plays, 79. 414 total yards for the Redskins, 315 for the Eagles. And time of possession and turnovers are two that I want to highlight. Only one turnover for the Redskins, two turnovers for the Eagles. The Redskins win the turnover battle, and usually when you win a turnover battle, you win the game. And check this out, time of possession, 41 minutes and 7 seconds for the Redskins, 18 minutes 53 seconds for the Eagles. So the Redskins able to win the turnover battle and able to control the time of possession, which Chip Kelly doesn't really care about. He wants play count, but he only had 52 plays.
Chip Kelly, well, we're going to get to Chip Kelly as soon as we finish with the defense, but I think that Dr. Frankenstein, that experiment of this, but he's created a monster. But yeah, let's go back to the defense for a minute real quick before we get to Brother Chip. Linebackers played well today. The linebackers played well. I had issues with the linebackers not filling the holes, meeting the holes today. They had DeMarco Murray broke a big one early in the game, but after that, Riley was out. Will Compton got the start. I'm a big Will Compton fan. I think if there's a way, but you know, Keenan Robinson is a good linebacker. I think they got good depth in that position where Compton can back up Robinson and Riley. Kerrigan, like we were saying, when he didn't have the greatest game, but you heard his name. Trent Murphy had the big game in the end, but Will Compton and Preston Smith. Preston Smith continues to impress. Mm-hmm. You don't hear about Preston Smith getting an opportunity to play and making a bad play.
Every
time he gets a chance, he lets you know he's there.
Something happen. Your guy Will Compton with 7 tackles today, and like I said, just more good linebacker play. Kerrigan, 1 sack, 4 tackles. Trent Murphy, 2 tackles, 2 sacks. Preston Smith, 2 tackles, 1 sack. And so, yeah, the linebackers really did step up today, and your guy Will Compton did absolutely have a great day. So if you're ready, let's jump to Philadelphia and talk about this team and what's going on. So Chip Kelly comes in. He's this genius. They win 10-6. They go 10-6 first year. They go 10-6 second year. He made a lot of noise this offseason from re-signing Shady McCoy, sending the quarterback Foles to St. Louis, and bringing in Bradford, bringing in DeMarco Murray, bringing in Ryan Matthews, and bringing in Darren Sproles, and everything's supposed to just kind of click for this team. And what was interesting is that while everyone was looking at it with some kind of interest, there were a lot of rumblings in Philadelphia, especially among the players, like, yo, we don't know what this guy's like really all about. And so we're actually maybe seeing what some of those players were talking about, because this doesn't seem like it's what he had planned in this offseason, what they've been able to do up to this point.
I think he was hoping to get a new recruiting class in this year, right?
he thought this was college, get a whole new group of players.
Because if you think about it, man, he never had to develop a long-term relationship with a good player. Because it was a good player, he expected to keep him 3 years at most, right? He was a good player.
At most. Mm-hmm.
Right. If he couldn't play, he might keep him around five, right? just to help him out, right? But so the relationship that you have to develop with the team, the way that you the way you coordinate who your leaders are, the way you your communication with the team, who are your field generals, who are your locker room guys, right? Mm-hmm. It seemed to me that he went out of his way to destroy that. The guys who were leaders, absolutely.
Shady McCoy, Nick Foles, Jeremy Maclin, that was big time. I mean, even Deshaun Jackson.
Deshaun Jackson, he's sending these guys out of here, get these guys out of here. And why? It wasn't like that. And then, okay, especially like last year with the they tried it with the rumor things.
That was
Jackson,
so weird.
Jackson, a gang affiliation.
When
did that happen, right? It was a gang that beat up on us, right?
And even with Shady McCoy, it's like, he's out of there, and then there's all these talks about he thinks he's not, doesn't like black players, and it's like, what's happening in Philadelphia with this Chip Kelly thing?
But a new recruiting class coming, he would have to deal with it.
It feels like almost a similar situation with Jay Gruden. I mean, like, if they don't turn it around this year, it may not matter that the first two seasons he was 10-6. I mean, they made the playoffs the first year, missed it the second year. But if they don't get it turned around this year, they may not want this guy back. And he had two winning seasons so far.
Well, if you look across town and see what's happening with the Nationals, right? They were in the playoffs. This is an expansion team that went to the playoffs for a couple of straight years, and now they got his playing ticket. They got him on Booker.com, right?
Folded like a chair. She's like, what in the world happened with the Nationals?
Right, they got nerve to throw a no hitter in the next to the last game.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Where was that against the Mets? The last series. Just says, what have you done for me lately? Yeah.
Well, the truth is that now the city doesn't need anything else to occupy its time because football season is back and it's fall football. I mean, just in general, today was just a good football day. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a little cool outside. It's October. A little bit of rain was in the air yesterday. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. You heard the reports that, of course, this alleged hurricane was coming through here. Armageddon 3, whatever, right? You heard the reports out of Burgundy and Gold Park that they were practicing with wet footballs. They would put footballs in a bucket. And I thought to myself, I've been playing football all my life, right?
Back when the day.
And it rains sometimes. And the football got wet. Are you saying these guys have never played with a wet football?
I heard, local NBC Channel 4 has that Jay Gruden show on Saturdays, right? Yeah. And from time to time, when I'm in between the evening college football games and the nightcap, I try to flip in to watch it. And they're talking to Gruden about that very thing, about, how do you prepare the team to play in the rain? And I'm like, who hasn't played football in the rain, whether it's boys club in the parking lot or whether it's, out in the grass at school? Everybody does. And they're professionals. You got people with longer cleats. Who has to have to soak the ball in the water? We've all played with the ball. What are you talking about?
What was all that? They had to play the football in the rain. You know what? The Eagles had to play in the rain, too. It's like, oh, God, what are we going to do? And to me, the team reacted to it. They reacted to it. What are we going to do? We're going to practice. We'll put the ball in. And the players got to be saying, What are we doing? We should be practicing plays. You
right.
You're wasting our time, right? You're wasting
we
our
need
time.
To practice the game plan.
That's right.
We don't need to dunk balls in waters and in water to feel how the ball feels in water. It's like, it's going to be wet. We know
that's
that.
Right.
Just get better gloves. Anyway,
exactly right.
You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio at federalnewsradio.com. We're the same whether it's raining outside or not. We know how to do this radio show indoors or outdoors. Coming up, we'll take a look at the rest of the NFC East. We'll take a look at the Redskins opponent next week. Stay close to the Federal Football Report. Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM. And federalnewsradio.com is the website. The Redskins beat the Eagles 23-20 to go to 2-2 on the season. And we're going to jump into the locker room to hear some press conference audio of the Redskins. And so we'll get some Jay Gruden stuff. Kevin, let's hear that audio.
He's one of the greatest competitors on this football team, and people feed off of that. And, you know, those are some tough catches that he made today. And, you know, he probably didn't have the type of numbers that he wants after a game, you know, but because he's such a great competitor. But when the ball's in the air, he's going to go get it. And I'm happy for Pierre. I'm happy for Kirk. I'm happy for the whole offense, obviously making that last drive and overcoming what we overcame. You know, we got to do a better job in the second half, though. We're, you know, our third quarter offense, defense, leaves a little to be desired. We have a lot of work to do coming out of the halftime. But overall, good game.
Yeah, Kirk's done a lot of good things for you, but he hasn't had a drive like today coming behind last 2 minutes. Did you see him growing today in any way?
I think so. You know, you can see his decision making is pretty good. You know, to have that high completion percentage, touchdown, no interceptions. He had the one sack, which really was not a sack because he gained a half a yard. It shouldn't have been a sack. We'll argue that one. But he's managing the football game, and he's putting us in a position to win in the fourth quarter. And we finally did that. You know, we're keeping it close, having the ability to win in the fourth quarter, making a key drive at the end to win it. It's great to see our quarterback and our entire team do that because, you know, we're going to have other games that are going to be close like this. We'll be down in a third, fourth quarter. We're going to have to come back, and it's great to have this experience and know we can do it.
All right, that was Coach Gruden with the press conference. Kevin, you've got some thoughts on some of the things he talked about, huh?
Yeah, one thing he mentioned, he was so proud of the way the guys overcame all that adversity to win the game. It seems to me that they caused that adversity because they were ahead 13-0. You know, if they had played the game, scored some more touchdowns, it wouldn't have been an adverse situation that they had to overcome. So the adversity was themselves.
It's one thing when adversity comes your way. It's another thing when you make the adversity yeah. yourself and then you try to have to find your way out of it.
Okay.
It's like that saying, you know, don't pray to God to get you out of mess that you made yourself.
Yeah, really, really. Well, you know, congratulations on overcoming yourselves, right? The other thing was we mentioned earlier that Kirk's drive, the legendary drive of Captain Kirk at the end of the game. That was Alfred Morris, man. That was a healthy dose of Alfred Morris, man, pounding him. Like you said, your running back doesn't feel good until he's got the ball at least 10, 12
times.
Yeah,
he's
got
to have the ball at least 12
times. And, I just want to bring that to the coach's attention. I think maybe during the next press conference, we have to make these comments live so we can have that immediate reaction because it doesn't, you know, we got guys like George Wallace out there doing a great job. But some of these guys, I don't know if they realize what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be not just there to be the coach's friend, to be able to let the coach give a sound bites. He's supposed to report the game, find out what's happening. Ask him, why don't you have guys on the team that can give you a yard if it's 3rd and 1?
Right.
You know, why don't you know, what's the problem with that, right? You got to have guys that ask the tough questions. I don't see that happening.
You're looking for real good investigative journalism.
I want some reporters out there. I want some reporters. I want a bunch of tweeters and bloggers and stuff. Give me some reporters, right?
You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and Federal News Radio. com is the website. So looking ahead, the Redskins have the Falcons next week. The Falcons are 4-0. Redskins again 2-2. And so, look, what are you looking in out of next week's game, Kevin? What do you need to see from the Redskins?
I need to see some deep help down the middle because Julio Jones is going to eat these guys alive if they leave these guys isolated one-on-one. I mean, granted, you want the cornerback to be able to cover a guy, but not every single play.
Right.
And you just cannot just leave the guys out there on the island. So I'm looking for some fresh defensive schemes, and I'm looking for some some bend but don't break type of defense. So the front guys are going to have
hard
to stop the run.
It's hard to stop a guy like Julio Jones all game. You're not going to be able to do that. I mean, he's not Julio for no reason, you know, because people just decided they didn't want to stop him. I mean, everyone tries to stop him, but it's hard, you know, because he's such a great player. You know, and then you've got Matt Ryan throwing him the ball. So, yeah, the defense really has their work cut out for them. I do think, however, that if the line can get some pressure on Matt Ryan, you know, and not give him all day to you know, throw the ball and to pick the secondary apart, easier said than done. I think that's, you know, first step. I think offensively, you want to see the Redskins run the ball, because I do believe that they can run on this Atlanta defense. You know, you don't want to get caught up in all this trying to throwing the ball, you know, 40 some odd times a game like they did today. You really want to commit to the run. Look, whether it's Alfred Morris or Matt Jones, one of these guys should have over 22 carries. Somebody's got to run the rock next week, and that's going to be the way. You saw the success that Dallas had against Atlanta in the first half when they were running the ball before Atlanta started that comeback. You want to see a commitment to the run in this first half, and they have to do it. They've got to give the ball to Alfred or Matt Jones, one or the other, more than 17 times like Alfred Morris saw today.
Yeah, I have an idea. Give the ball to your best player. Determine who your best running back is.
And put the ball in his
hands. Hands, right? If he gets hurt, or if he like busts a 55-yard run and he's a little winded, you know, maybe bring the other guy in. But, you know, who is your horse? Who is the guy who is going to lead this team? You got to determine that. You got to let the fans know, but the team has to know.
This
is a guy. You're fracturing your team when you got running back by committee. I mean, if you can go back to the 72 Dolphins, right? You know, look in the history books, all you kids. The 72 Dolphins had 2,000-yard runners and Jim Kick and Mercury Morris, right? But then they got the bruising fullback and Larry Zonka. If you have a three-headed monster like that, yeah, by all means, just rotate and run them all, right? But they don't. They got two good running backs, and we don't know what we got in Chris Thompson until I think we have a great. It's ironic that he has 25 on. That's Joe Washington's old number, right? Because he has a game similar to Joe Washington, right? But I don't think Joe Washington can stand the pounding of that 25 carries a game between the tackles. So if determine who your running back is going to be, stick with them.
Right.
Just pound the ball, keep the ball out of Matt Ryan's hands, out of Julio Jones' hands.
So what I like to do, in general, in life, basically, Kevin, is you know, I break the year down in quarters and make goals per quarter or whatever. And so when you look at the NFL season, let's do that with the Redskins, there's 16 games. We can break it down in four-game quarters. So after four games, after the first quarter of the season, the Redskins are 2-2. What's your grade?
Well, that depends. Again, we're taping this after the Burgundy and Gold won, but before the Cowboys played. So by the time we see, we could be very well tied for first place or in first place all by ourselves the next time we do this show. So right now, I give it a solid C.
Okay.
A solid C, because they're not as bad as they were last year, not as good as I hoped.
Yeah, still have a long way to go. To be honest with you, I'm a little more optimistic. I give it a B. Not simply because, not as bad as last year. I think that's clear. And sure, not as good as some people would hope. But I think I give it an extra point to give it a B, simply because some of the questions coming into the season, I think we found favorable answers, like to the offensive line. They're playing a lot better than I thought we would have expected them to play. I think the defense have been playing a lot better, wounded and all. I mean, the secondary has been good. I think you hit the nail right on the head with the linebackers playing better. And so with the record 2-4 after, you know, the games that they've had, I think that's a pretty good first quarter for the Redskins, first quarter of the season. Another thing, when it comes down to the quarterback play, I want to take a look at something. So throughout the whole season, Kirk Cousins is 74 for 107, 715 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. I know how you feel about the guy, but what do you think about those numbers there? Here's the thing that I'll just put this on the table. I don't see Kirk Cousins winning games that RG3 would not be able to win, and losing games that RG3 will get blown out in. You know, I just don't see this big, you know, improvement from one guy to the next, you know?
You know, I would love to be in the film room to see if Kurt is leaving plays on the field. Now, it might not be Kirk's fault. They might not be designing offenses that are capable of scoring. It looks like, if you look at Kurt, Just think about it. You're looking at Andy Dalton, basically, right? Andy Dalton will have a great game, although he had a great receiver in A.J. Green. But when it came down to the crunch time, to the playoff games, he just couldn't do it. Couldn't get it done. Either he didn't have it within himself to get it done, or they didn't put him in a position to get it done. And I'm going to give, as hard of a critic as I am on Kirk, I'm going to give him a pass on this one, because it would seem to me, even the touchdown today that Pierre Garçon caught, the guy was on him. Right. He just hit him in the numbers with the ball. They need a little bit more creativity in the red zone. They need to design some more plays that is just unstoppable. It's like hit or miss, right? Then Kurt threw a deep one to Jamison Crowder in the end zone, and he caught the ball, was out of bounds, but Kurt has to place that ball a little bit better. Right. So they just need a little bit more of that, a little bit more creativity. They need to be the steak and not the butcher.
Sure. So you gave the team a C. What do you grade the offense, and then what do you grade the defense?
I give the offense I give them a B-. As a unit, I like what I see out of the young players. I like their fearlessness. I like the fact that they're coming into professional football from college and not missing the beat. They don't seem to be overwhelmed. They say, hey, I can do this.
Yeah, I can play.
I don't like the position they're putting them in. I like the development of the offensive line, which to me is at least a three-year project. Mm-hmm. The running backs, you got to like them. They've been putting an unfair advantage. The tight end position, kind of interesting because with the injury. Injuries there. Some guys are getting play. They're catching like 3-yard passes, but
I'll tell you what, I am interested to see if there's anything on the injury front with Jordan Reed. That's why I want to see if, coming out of this game, because he was wobbling a little bit.
Yeah, it was late in the game, but I mean, that wouldn't surprise you, right? But that would, I don't want to say anybody get hurt, but that would force Kirk to look elsewhere, because he's been pretty much the go-to guy, and teams know that, and they've just been playing him, soft in the middle, not letting him go deep. Well, I mean, he can't go but so deep anyway. So, let's... Yeah, they're trying.
What about the defense? What's your grade for them?
The defense?
Offense is a B-. Defense is...
You got to give them two grades, because they were A at the beginning, and then they turned into a C-. And again, that was, a part of the scheme that they were running that would leave guys open one-on-one against an injured defensive back. So I got to give them an A for effort, though. An A for effort, right? I think that, part of this, the report card got to go with these 26 coaches, too, right? I give half of them an A, half of them an F, so the whole thing bounces out to a C. And I can't tell who to give what grade
who gives
to.
Because I'm not sure what all these guys are doing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. What does a running back coach tell Jay Gruden to say? I think one of these guys is better than the other one, but I'm not sure. So let's just play them all. Is that what the running back coach is telling them? How does that work? Does Gruden tell the running back coach to tell the running backs to do this, and then the running backs do this, and he goes back to the running back coach and goes back to Gruden? Or do they have to stop by Sean McVay first? How does that work? What is the hierarchy there?
There's so many guys telling people to do so many things, and none of us know who's doing what. It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM at federalnewsradio.com. And so, look, I think after a 23-20 win at home against the Eagles, if the Redskins would have lost this game late, it would have been more of, here we go, it would have been more of the Miami Dolphins game. It would have been reliving that. But they didn't. They won this game. Kirk Cousins, love him or hate him, think he's better than RG3 or not, whatever. I think that with every win and then a convincing win like this, not convincing, but coming down to that last drive and putting together a good drive, a convincing drive to win the game, it may silence some of those talks maybe for yet another week of, and it's not even the coaching staff that's bringing up any kind of backup situation. Because even when Colt McCoy cut his foot earlier this week and RG3 was taking second team snaps, everyone was, so is RG3 now the second string quarterback? I think that this performance might at least calm that down for a little bit, because nothing cures controversy like winning. If you win, these talks don't happen, or at least one would assume that. And so we'll see what that means, or what that all kind of boils down to as we look ahead to the Redskins and the Falcons. But I tell you what, after five games, if they beat the Falcons, you're looking at a 3-2 team. Who would have thought that coming into the year?
I'll take it. You know, it's certainly better than nothing. I would rather have 5-0, but the NFC East is ripe for the picking right now. I mean, the Giants, although they're you know, winning games, they're not that great a team. You know, right. They got a couple of fantastic players, but they have virtually no running game.
Right,
and the defense can be had. You know, so this is it. This is 9-7 might win this division again. So
9-7 could win the division because who knows. By the time Dallas gets Romo and Dez Brack, they could be too far back to make a difference. Who knows? You know, right. I mean, you know, again, at the time that we're taping the show, Dallas has yet to play the Saints. And then next week, Dallas has the Patriots. And so, you know, you're looking at a team that started 2-0, could very well, by the time their bye week comes, be 2-3. Who knows? I mean, the NFC East is wide open. So, look, we'll get together next week. We'll see what happens with this Redskins-Falcons game, and they could win next week, and then we're like, hey, we're looking at a 3-2 team. Who would have thought, right?
Yeah,
and so
right.
The first quarter of the season is over. First four games, Redskins 2-2 after a 23-20 victory over the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll be back next week with more expert analysis and breakdown of the game
you got it.
On the Federal Football Report.